You're listening to the PGIM India Insights podcast series by PGIM India Asset Management.
Imagine planting a mango tree in your backyard. You water it, nurture it, and wait patiently. Seasons pass. Some years it blossoms, some years it doesn't. But over time it grows strong, bears fruits, and becomes a source of joy and abundance. Investing in India's growth companies is much like planting that tree. It requires patience, care, and belief in the long-term potential. Welcome back to PGIM India Insights. You are listening to Ankit Jain, and I have with me our very own Mr. Vinay Paharia, CIO of the mutual fund business, who will share with us today his views on a study which he recently did on what has worked in investing in India over the last 20 years. Hi, Vinay.
Hi, Ankit.
So, Vinay, this study which you've done, what does exactly it defines and measure growth and quality in companies?
So, Ankit, our objective in doing this study was to understand what are the key aspects about companies which help investors identify such companies which can ensure that they are able to outperform the market over a long period of time on a consistent basis. In quest of doing that, we have tried to identify certain quantitative parameters like growth and quality. The way we have defined growth is we looked at companies which have grown their sales in the previous 3 years at a rate higher than the overall average for corporate India. And the way we measure quality is also by looking at companies which generate returns on equity higher than their overall average. And when we are talking about returns on equity, we are looking at the four-year average returns on equity of the companies in the previous reported four-year period. So that's how we measure quality. The reason why we are using quantitative measures is to ensure that there is consistency and that there is no subjectivity in terms of trying to understand the results.
Sure. So what we are saying here is that we look at the previous 3 years sales growth and previous 3 years return on equity. And if it is above average, we've considered that as high growth, high quality companies, correct?
Absolutely.
So why is India considered a favorable environment for, you know, growth investing? There are so many styles, but why, you know, growth investing for India?
That's a very good question, Ankit, for the simple reason that investing can be in cheap companies, it can be in high growth companies, it could be in special situations, and there are many other forms of investing, and all of them have their pros and cons, and all of them do work in various parts of the world at varied time periods. But we think that India is particularly suitable for growth investing, and there are two reasons for that. First is India is a high growth economy. And as data suggests, India and China over a long period of time in the last 10-12 years have been the biggest drivers of growth on a global basis. In fact, recently in the last 4 to 5 years, growth in China has significantly reduced, but that in India has continued to remain unabated at more than 5 to 7%. And when the overall economy is growing between 5 to 7% real or 10 to 12% nominal, you can identify a lot of companies which could be growing their businesses at more than 12% per annum. And that makes it particularly attractive hunting ground for growth companies. So in simple words, India is the fertile field of growth for growth investors. Secondly, and a very important consideration, companies in India are not just high growth companies, but if we look at the overall returns on equity for corporate India, it is significantly better than global average. So if one looks at just the country, India perfectly represents high growth and high quality characteristics. And this is one of the big reasons why growth investing is particularly suitable for a country like India for a fairly long period of time to come.
Sure, makes sense. The whole world is coming to India for its growth story. So why deviate and invest in some other strategy? So I can, resonate very well what you're trying to say. But if you look at last, 3-4 financial years, specifically in FY23 and 24, how did growth investing perform and what really changed in FY25? If you, can take us through the last 3 years journey of growth investing.
So Ankit, just like any other form of investing, growth investing also has gone through its own ups and downs. It has seen very good times and it has also seen very bad times. However, it has worked far more number of years than it has not. As you highlighted, 2023-24 was in fact one of the worst periods of growth investing. On an average, companies which had both these characteristics, which is high growth and high ROE, underperformed the overall universe by almost 14%. Whereas the opposite type of companies, which is companies which have low growth and low ROE characteristics, actually outperformed the overall universe by 27%. And this was in FY24 period. This kind of an underperformance by growth companies and outperformance by low quality and low growth companies has never presented itself in history of last 20 years. Why did this happen? Sometimes very difficult to answer these questions, and maybe the answers are only conjured up in hindsight. What we can imagine is there was a very strong flow of capital from global investors in the periods beginning 1st April 2023, there was some sort of fluctuation in interest rate expectations. And since growth investing flourishes in a low interest rate regime, there were certain doubts, and probably that could also have caused some bit of underperformance. And finally, I believe some of the underperformance could have been caused by the huge streak of wins by growth companies from the year 2008 right up till 2020. So some of them might have become overvalued and that might have resulted in a massive underperformance. However, based on what we have seen, the pendulum swung completely on the other end, which means most of the growth companies became extremely attractively valued, and hence from June 2024, we started seeing the pendulum started to swing back again in favor of growth investing, and the tide started turning back in favor of so-called growth stocks, and we started seeing a revival in them. So I think that is how the overall trend persisted in the last 2 years. However, if one looks at the big picture, how have these companies performed on an annual basis over the last 20 years, then we can clearly see that the average 1 year forward returns of growth stocks has been approximately 17% versus the average 1 year forward returns of low quality, low growth companies has been just 10% for an overall universe average of approximately 14%. And that tells us that growth investing has been a very rewarding experience over a very long period of time, but with some ups and downs, as is the case with any strategy.
Sure. Actually, I can resonate that because, in the short term, nobody knows where flows or liquidity or fundamentals can chase stocks. But in the long run, you nicely put that, these blips will keep coming. But if you see the overall picture in the long run, growth investing has done very, very well. So in your study also, Vinay, you've spoken about this term called as batting average. What is this batting average and how has it been for high growth, high ROE companies over the last 20 years?
Ankit, batting average simply means how many times you have won compared to the number of matches you have played. In terms of investing, it simply means how many years has your investment strategy outperformed relative to the total number of years that you have remained invested. For growth investing, based on our study, the batting average for growth stocks which are high quality and high growth rocks, has been approximately 70%, which means that they have outperformed in 7 out of 10 years or 14 out of 20 years. And that tells us that it is an extremely superior number compared to the other forms. For example, low quality and low growth stocks have outperformed just 30% of times, which means over a 10-year period, they have just outperformed in 3 years, or in 20-year period, they have outperformed by 6 years. And remember, for 3 of those years actually were in the last 5 years. That is the post-pandemic period.
When I actually heard the word batting average, it reminded me that when you play cricket, the best batting average of a batsman generally in a one-day international is somewhere close to 55, 56, and that's Mr. Virat Kohli. So you're actually giving us a study where the batting average is more than that, and which is 70%, and that is for high growth, high ROE companies. So I can understand that in the long term, if you just want to bank on one strategy, there's nothing better than a high growth, high ROE kind of a strategy. So Vinay, you know, you always in your study has spoken about, you know, valuation discipline is the key to investing in growth. Can you, you know, talk about how effective valuation discipline can help it to enhance the overall strategy in the long run?
Sure. So Ankit, valuation discipline can ensure that your strategy is able to deliver on its promise, because without this discipline, it will backfire. How does this happen? If you are overpaying for any company, the markets over a longer period of time will normalize the valuation, which means that if you have overpaid, the market will ensure that there is some derating, and that will ensure that your future returns will be lower than the underlying fair value growth. Also, if you are able to purchase companies at a price which is lower than their fair values, then there is a clear re-rating tailwind which can work in your favor, which means your future returns can be higher than the underlying fair value growth. I think it is very important for investors to adhere to valuation disciplines, because buying stocks at any price can clearly destroy long-term returns. And hence, it's very important to clearly understand what would be the fair values of the companies which you are buying. And the strategy should focus on buying such companies at a reasonable fair value to ensure a long-term compounding.
Sure. So what I can relate is that if you invest companies which are trading closer to their fair values or below fair values, the upside potential is generally higher in subsequent years. Whereas if you invest in those companies which are available at any price without ignoring the valuation, I think it can also be a trap. So when I, you know, one more interesting question which I had is, there's so much happening across, you know, the world, and whether it is tariffs on the local side, you know, there has been talks about GST reduction and all those things. What is your take on markets, you know, before we end the discussion, if I can hand it over to you for that?
So I think, as you rightly pointed out, the current market environment is uncertain. There are lots of challenges in the environment in the form of tariffs, in the form of macro slowdown, and also in the form of valuation excesses, which we are seeing in some parts of the market. So while there are certain challenges, there are also certain triggers which bring us optimism. The first of these triggers is the extremely loose monetary policy environment which we are in currently. The governor has front-loaded the interest rate cuts. He has front-loaded the CRR cuts, because of which there is ample liquidity in the system, which ensures that there is adequate money available for consumers to spend, adequate money available for corporates to build more plants and factories. That is, over a period of next 3 to 6 months, we think that this is going to act as a reasonably important tailwind for countering the current slowdown. In addition, I think there is one very important significant trigger which we have recently seen in the form of the Prime Minister's announcement to reduce the GST rates in some of the consumption categories. We can also call it as GST 2.0 reforms. in this reforms, we think that the overall level of GST is likely to be reduced in many of the mass consumption items. And this can result in a significant increase in consumption due to the principle of elasticity of demand. Thirdly, there could be some tailwind in consumption due to the pay revision of the government employees due to the upcoming pay commission related revision. I think these three factors together will result in some sort of positive tailwind for consumption, which is currently showing weakness. And hence, even in the near term, there is scope for some optimism as far as the business environment is concerned. Having said that, the concern related to valuation excesses remains. Indian markets are not cheap today. They are trading at premium valuations, and we have borrowed some returns from the future. In summary, from an investor's perspective who are invested in India for at least 5-year period, this continues to remain a reasonably good time. And especially if you are investing in growth companies, they are not trading at excessive valuations, and there is an underlying strong tailwind in these companies' business models for the next 3 to 5 to 10 year period, which will ensure that the underlying fair value growth is reasonably attractive. And hence, we think for long-term investors, the markets remain attractive. For growth investors, markets remain attractive. But for investors who are looking to invest in markets to make a quick buck, or who are in the market for just near to medium term investments, it presents a very hazy picture. And hence, short to medium term investments should be avoided in markets, at least at this point of time.
Oh, thanks, Vinay. I think I'll summarize whatever we have discussed, for our listeners. One, growth and quality investing should be part of core strategy. Second, and the most important, I think batting average of high growth, high ROE companies is 70%, which is better than any other investing strategy if you look at a period of 20 years. Third, if valuation discipline is incorporated while doing growth investing, it can be even more effective because there's a chance of a PE re-rating also happening in these companies. Fourth, and the most important, from a medium to long term, I think Indian markets continue to look very, very lucrative, and specifically growth and quality companies, because they continue to grow at a robust high teens to double digit kind of a returns. Vinay, thank you so much for updating on this very important note which you released on what has worked in investing in India. If you have any last comment for our listeners, Vinay, I'll hand it over to you.
Sure, Ankit. It's not a comment, but I want to end the entire conversation with an analogy. So imagine that you want to travel to the airport in the morning, and you do not have your own vehicle, but you have to take a cab. And you come out of the house, and there are only two types of cabs available. One is the super cab, and the other one is sober cab. Super cab has a clear brand promise. They would ensure that you reach your destination as fast as possible. They clearly have given instructions to their drivers that one of their key KRAs is to reach as soon as possible, and that's it. There are no other questions. They can jump signals at times. They can drive over potholes. They can cross lanes. And sometimes, because of this, their passengers do suffer some minor injuries. Whether or not you reach your destination on time very much depends on the skill of the driver who is driving the super cab. On the other hand, you have sober cab. The brand promise of sober cabs is that they will try to reach the destination broadly in time, which is the regular broad time period. So for example, if the Google Maps tells you that the time to your airport should be 30 minutes, sober cabs will reach somewhere in 25 to 35 minute zone. Their brand promise is that they will not cross lanes. Their drivers will always drive at a fair pace. And how do they do it? Why do not cross the lanes? Simply because they have looked at a long period traffic data from your house to the destination and figured out the lane which generally moves faster. And their drivers generally drive in that single lane without crossing. So it's a very boring drive. Since everything is so well documented, they are able to hire even new drivers who are all able to offer the same experience to all customers, irrespective of who is driving the cab. And hence, from a customer's perspective, these are the two options which are available, Super Cab and Sober Cab. Sober Cab's drivers will ensure that you reach your destination very close to the normally applicable time, but they will ensure that you have a peaceful sleep while you are in their car. You are not injured. Whereas on the other hand, Super Cabs will ensure that you reach ahead of the normative time. And in that process, they might drive a little in a rash manner, and it can have a little bit of weaker consequences as far as accidents, etc. is concerned for their passengers. Both of these are choices which you as a customer has to make. It is not about which type of a service is right or wrong, but it is about the nature of experience which the passenger wishes to enjoy. Super Cab represents performance-driven investments, whereas Sober Cab represents process-driven investment strategy. With that, I would want to end this conversation. Thank you very much, Ankit. Over to you.
Thanks, Vinay. I think I can definitely say that PGM is part of that whole Sober Cab camp where we believe in investing in growth companies. We know what we are doing, and that's what I think everybody wants to listen. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening to us. Catch you on the next podcast very soon. Thank you.
Mutual fund investments are subject to market risks. Read all scheme-related documents carefully.
You're listening to the PGM India Insights podcast series by PGM India Asset Management.